welcome. It's time for another Speaking of Schools podcast. Of course, coming to you from South Carolina's Department of Education, my name's Doug Keel. Glad to have you aboard. Today, we're going to be revisiting the Friday, October 14th luncheon held in Columbia of the What Works SC Award presentation. And we're going to hear the award presentation to a group called Healing Species. And we're also going to have a conversation with Linda O'Brien, the CEO of South Carolina ETV, and Superintendent Jarena Postlewaite from Charleston County Schools, as well as Russell Booker from the Spartanburg School District 7, who will be discussing a timely issue. That's our lineup. We think you'll enjoy it. Stay tuned with us today as we're speaking of schools.
Healing Species is the best kept secret, we believe, in South Carolina. We believe it is a program that can totally change lives of children and students across our state and across the world. It's a curriculum that I actually began developing when I was in law school from some of the things I learned primarily in criminal law class. Almost 99.9% of your violent offenders were abused as children. And while they were still children, they went on to also abuse others. In the legal arena, especially violent crimes are referred to as depraved heart crimes. And so I started putting two and two together. If we know that crime is an issue of the heart, we're labeling it that, and we know that it starts at an early age with children who are repeating abuse, that they're witnessing or they're seeing or it's being done to them, why don't we go in on the early age and intercept? And let's intervene, let's deal with issues of the heart, and let's teach them a better way, in a different way. And I put together a 13-week curriculum, and we merged into it the participation of rescued dogs. And these dogs go with trained, highly trained professional instructors into school classrooms and reach these kids with our messages for a period of 13 weeks.
We teach compassion education and violence intervention in practical ways. A lot of times on the very first day of class, I tell the students the dog's story and how the dog has been rescued and rehabilitated and how the dog is now his best version of himself. And so I try to get the students to understand that through the lessons of Healing Species, we have the tools to transform ourselves into our best version of ourselves. And that's the person that we want to take out into the schools, into our families, into the workforce. That's the person that's going to transform not just our community, but our state.
And literally at the end of these 13 weeks, it is unbelievable. These children's lives are phenomenally changed forever.
Favorite part of Healing Species is we're not really under the intimidation of the cadre. It's free to talk about your problems, release your stress, play with the dog, talk with the teacher about what you need to. I was an angry kid. It helps mature you a lot more, and you don't see it at the beginning, but later on in the cycle and in the progress and the program, you really see yourself maturing from what you were. A lot of things I learned about being in here is how to control a lot of the anger and a lot of the stress built up, and how to release it in positive ways.
Our program dogs are amazing. They are all rescues, and so they're all so grateful just for a little bit of love. And so they just sit there smiling and wagging their tails, and the kids are playing with the dogs, and it really makes the entire teaching experience better, because as I'm teaching them character education and they're sitting there, they're able to pet the dog and they can pay attention to what I'm saying. I'm talking about compassion while they are demonstrating compassion. And so it all flows together. It works so well.
I feel like it should be in every school, at least some form of Healing Species or any type of coping class, because you really don't know what kids go through or what they've been through or what they're going to go through. And they need those life skills to prepare for the real world and what they might face in everyday life.
if all these children can really learn about compassion and empathy, and if somebody's there to teach them and tell them that they are important, that they do matter, that they can do so much and they're going to help South Carolina as a whole and the whole nation, then those kids can totally change the world.
I believe the lessons that we teach these children, they may not be getting them anywhere else. And we're teaching them about love and courage and overcoming and forgiveness and goal setting despite adversity and terrible circumstances. And we've just seen it transform the hearts and lives of so many children. I know that if it could be in every school, what an impact it would make.
That was Sherry Thompson, the founder of Healing Species, and other folks telling you about that award-winning program, the 2016 Dick and Tunkey Raleigh What Works SC Award for Excellence, which was presented at the luncheon in Columbia on October 14th. Now let's hear a conversation between CEO Linda O'Brien from South Carolina Educational Television and the Charleston County School District Superintendent Jerina Postlewaite, as well as Spartanburg District 7 Superintendent Russell Booker. They are introduced by Dr. Don Gordon of the Riley Institute at Furman University.
Of course, we are delighted to have with us here on stage two of my favorite people and two shining lights in the world of public education, Dr. Jerita Postlewaite and Dr. Russell Booker. Jerita is superintendent of Charleston County School District, was voted the South Carolina Superintendent of the Year when she was school district superintendent in Horry County Schools. She has been a teacher for 16 years. She served in numerous administrative positions. She helped found and establish the National Innovation Lab Network and co-founded Transform SC, a statewide business education partnership that fosters systemic educational change. Jerita is joined on stage by Dr. Russell Booker, South Carolina's 2015 Superintendent of the Year. Russell leads Spartanburg School District 7, where he guided the district through a bold and comprehensive restructuring and transformation initiative that has positioned the district for future growth and innovation. Under his leadership, Spartanburg 7 has launched 7 Ignites, an initiative that has placed a personal mobile device in the hands of every student beginning in the third grade. Dr. Postlewaite and Booker are here to talk with another one of my very favorite people, SCETV's Linda O'Brien. South Carolina, of course, is extremely fortunate to have Linda O'Brien. As president and CEO of South Carolina ETV, she oversees a statewide television and radio network and an education service reaching schools throughout the state. Earlier in her career in public broadcasting, Linda founded PBS's highly respected Nightly Business Report, the nation's longest running nightly business show. And since she joined SCETV in 2010, the network has opened a new state-of-the-art radio production facility, television newsfeed studio, launched 2 new national music series for NPR, Song Travels with Michael Feinstein, one of my favorites, and Piano Jazz Rising Stars, as well as another of my favorites, the Peabody and Emmy-winning national PBS program, A Chef's Life, now in its 4th season at PBS. Linda's here to host this conversation with two of South Carolina's top superintendents. I invite you all to sit back and enjoy. Linda.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Don. And it is just great to be back at the Dick and Tunkey Raleigh What Works South Carolina Conference. I was here last year and so taken by all of what you all do. We appreciate, Don, the work that you and your staff do to bring this important initiative to the entire state of South Carolina. And I'd also like to thank Secretary Raleigh for the work he does, not only for this state, but nationally, continues to raise the bar for education for our nation. And congratulations to all of the awards finalists. And welcome to our panelists, Russell Booker and Jerita Postlewaite. And today's conference is really looking at opportunity gaps. And we're talking about income, ethnicity, gender, and a number of factors, and how we can overcome them.
I'd like to start with your personal perspectives on what you think the number one opportunity gap is. And let's begin with you, Dr. Postolate.
Narrowing that to one answer would be very difficult, but I'll give you an example of the awareness gap that exists. Last week when Charleston County needed to evacuate because of the encroaching Hurricane Matthew, some people were inconvenienced by that order and had to decide where they were going to go and how far they were going to travel. Others had no way to leave town. They hadn't a bicycle to get out of town on, and they were reliant totally on others to arrange transportation, to arrange shelter. We ran the school district, of course, as is the case everywhere in South Carolina, helps run the Red Cross shelters. We had people come to the shelters who were the first busload who were of folks who came to the shelter were homeless. And when we closed the shelter on Sunday, we were left with three or four individuals who had absolutely no place to go. So one of the gaps that exists is this gap of not just resources, but the gap of hope, the gap of being able to be self-reliant, independent, knowing that one has the wherewithal to protect oneself and loved ones. So it's the understanding that people in extreme poverty have no safety net ever, and can quickly get the feeling that they are victims without any ability to have agency or impact or any control over their lives.
And how ironic, at this very conference a year ago, we were talking about the aftermath of the floods and the impact on the schools with Molly Spearman. And it is an ongoing issue for many people that is sometimes hidden. You don't always know about it. We don't see it. You see it in Charleston. What other gaps do you see, Dr. Booker, that are really impacting students in your district?
Well, and again, I agree with what Jarita said, but at the heart of it, you know, if we really boil it down, there is an economic gap in this state, and it doesn't just impact schools, it impacts whole communities. I'm from South Carolina. I love this place. You know, our motto, "While I breathe, I hope," is something that I truly believe in. So yeah, we had a flood last year, and that brought out the best in South Carolina. We had the hurricane this year. Again, we saw some wonderful things happening. We had the shooting. I was able to attend a community event in Spartanburg recently. Leo Twiggs has a wonderful art exhibit, Requiem for Mother Emanuel. And all of Spartanburg County came together on the 12th of this month. And he talked to us about South Carolina. He's a wonderful artist here in our state, such a jewel. And he talked about it, those moments, we always see the humanity of this great state of ours. And as we talk about opportunities that are before us right now, when we're addressing this gap, when we're addressing these disparities, I don't want to see the state wait for tragic events to happen to bring us together. So one of the greatest gaps we can address right now, I think, is that economic gap. So we, again, as a small state, we were talking about how small we were a second ago.
Yes.
We have an opportunity in this state to be bold, to step forward, and to really start to try to address some of these disparities. But we all live in a bubble, and we've got to be willing to get out of that bubble to really understand what's going on, not necessarily on I-95 or this part of the state, but in many of our communities, it's right across the street where you see these disparities. So being able to step forward, recognize and come to terms that there are gaps here, and then have the courage to say, let's address them.
Well, and another gap we heard about this morning, the conference with New York Times Magazine reporter Nicole Hannah-Jones as the keynote, talking about for a number of years that educators have implemented many different types of school reforms in order to close the achievement gap. And yet, the one reform that she says people have pretty much given up on is school integration, and despite a lot of evidence that it works. So what's happened? What's happened in South Carolina and nationally that we find ourselves in this situation?
Well, And many of you are just a little bit older than me, so you lived through integration. I didn't live through that time period. But what I can tell you I see in many of my communities, and I have both worlds in District 7. It's a small district in the city of Spartanburg, 7,000 students, 50 square mile area. And I have communities where there's quite a bit of wealth, but the majority of my communities, every housing project was built in Spartanburg County in those areas. So what's happened in these areas where you once had thriving areas, African-American and white, they've moved out of those communities now. They've moved to the suburbs, and it's left a void there. So the question becomes, how do we address those families who are left in those areas? So we've got things in place like school choice. You create magnet programs. You do a number of those things to give those families options. But the thing I'm most proud of that we're trying to do right now in our school district is to transform a community. This isn't just an educational issue. So what can we do, for example, on the north side of Spartanburg to address housing, education, the economy, you know, places where there's no quality learning for our youngest children? So we're taking a holistic approach to trying to revitalize the community and create a mixed income community so we don't have that disparity.
And we'll come back to that in a moment, but you used the word transform. And Dr. Postlewaite, you were the co-founder of Transform SC, which is really trying to transform education for the whole state. So tell us about your experience with that program and also in Charleston, how you're trying to really address some of these difficult gaps.
Thanks. Well, when I listened to the speaker this morning talk about integration as one solution that she believes has the most promise, I thought about how complex this problem is and how we often narrow it down to one solution set that looks promising without acknowledging that the system itself must change. The system was never established to bring all human beings to high levels of literacy. That's not the way the system was designed to work. It is essentially a batch processing system that assumes that virtually every child who enters the system gets about the same amount of time to learn in conditions that are about the same, and that almost all children move along every year, with some of us figuring out some things and others of us needing more time or greater, more experiences to reach the same level of learning. So the idea behind Transform is that the system itself must change. And one of the key ways to change the system is to get really clear about those tangible accomplishments that children, all young people, but certainly those of poverty, must have. What tangible accomplishment must we help children achieve so that doors open for them that would not have opened before? So quite simply, if our technical colleges are doing a marvelous job of preparing young men and women to be able to step into living wage careers, and I think they are for the most part, then what does it take for a child to step seamlessly out of the public school system into that opportunity? And we find that our accountability measures aren't pegged. They aren't aligned to what it takes to open a door of opportunity for children. So the idea is, let's figure out what those opportunities are out in the world that would help young people break cycles of poverty. Then let's figure out what it takes to prepare children to open those doors. That's very different than the way our current system operates, which, very simplistically put, is any child who goes through a series of exercises and accumulates, based on the amount of time he or she has been in class, 24 Carnegie units, receives a diploma. That diploma doesn't necessarily open a door to much of anything. We get much clearer on a different set of outcomes. We begin assessing along the way, thinking about what the readiness indicators are that tell us whether a child is more or less on track. And then we design our system and our resources around what it would take to steadily move children toward those very meaningful outcomes. So that was a long-winded answer, but that's the idea behind Transform South Carolina, or the transformation of our systems, is to see that the purpose of public education is to assure that every child who comes to us has many more meaningful opportunities when he leaves us than he would have had he not been with us.
And Linda, just to piggyback on that, the beauty of Transform South Carolina has also been the fact that we brought everybody to the table to address this. We all know we have what's called the profile of the South Carolina graduate now. And the thing I so love about that is we have said this is what a child in South Carolina needs to look like when they graduate. So it's my hope that this will really paint those disparities. If we say that a child needs to have global perspective, then it's our responsibility as a state to ensure that we're doing whatever we can do, regardless of where a child lives, to make sure that they've got those opportunities. So Transform South Carolina to me has been a flashlight, and we're pulling districts together. We're telling districts to try different things, be innovative. You know, if you fail, we're going to support you. And the system has also been set up in the past where, you know, if you tried things that didn't work, schools were punished. So we've created a system that really doesn't promote collaboration. And I think Transform South Carolina has really moved districts to say, hey, let's work together and spur on innovation.
But thinking again about this morning's comments from Nicole Hannah-Jones, saying that research shows from 50 years that the socioeconomic makeup of a school can play a larger role than the poverty of an individual of a student's family. That impact of that school is so important, and yet she's saying we're going back to a time that is not providing resources for all children. And how do we overcome that?
When we talk about integration, I think so often we think about integration in terms of race. My wife grew up here in Columbia, South Carolina. She grew up in a middle-class African-American neighborhood. In her neighborhood, and some of her friends are here today, there were professors, there were doctors, there were principals, there were school teachers. And she went to a predominantly African-American high school, had a wealth of advanced placement courses and foreign language courses. But what you had in that school was a diverse situation with kids who came from different experiences. All the same color, but different experiences. I think that is at the heart of what we're missing right now in so many of our schools when we talk about integration. You have schools that exist today where you don't have those families who are involved, as involved as you might have in a school district that is more middle class or upper middle class. So I think that's the challenge that we face right now. How do we address it? You know, we're doing things, as I mentioned, school choice programs, those are great. What ends up happening typically, though, those families who are in these schools that are under-resourced, they're going to take advantage of that. And then you're going to lose those families from those schools as well. But those families need those options. The courageous solution that we have to address in South Carolina is, are we willing to go into the neighborhoods and say, we've got to transform these communities. We've got to create communities where people like you and me aren't afraid to live and shop and break bread with people who may come from a varied background. And I think that's at the heart of the matter.
So it was beyond the schools. This is really a society.
We set up a system when we said we're going to concentrate poverty in different areas throughout our state. And now we're reaping the negative benefits of that system. But it takes courage to say, let's go in here and let's change it now. And you've got to build a lot of trust within these communities before you start that work. I'm proud to say I see that happening in Spartanburg. I see that happening in some of the communities that we're looking to revitalize right now.
And let's talk about it. You have Northridge, you have Cleveland Academy.
We know in Spartanburg, the Northside Initiative has become a major initiative in Spartanburg County. First of all, it takes a leader who is courageous enough to say, this needs to change. We've had that courageous leadership in our state. I'm looking at one of them. So it takes that first and foremost. But that leader needs to be able to connect with people from all backgrounds and to be able to garner the trust of people from all backgrounds. And we can't just say we've got to look at education. We've got to look at housing. So we brought everybody to the table, everybody. All of the joint funders, it's private, it's public, and the community at a grassroots level to really start painting a picture of what this needs to look like. We're getting ready to build a child development center with 100% private dollars because there is not a quality early learning center on that side of town. There's not a grocery store in this community. So through some private dollars and some grants and everybody's coming together, we've created a wonderful food hub now. We've moved the farmer's market. There's a restaurant in this particular area now. We're getting ready to build a wellness center. So again, if we can paint a picture of what this community looked like, I think we can paint a picture of what South Carolina can look like.
So you're really talking about the vision that you need. And Dr. Postaway, tell us about Charleston. I know there are many community projects that are ongoing there as well.
There are. I need to take a moment and talk about the history of Charleston. I've only lived there 14 months and there are native Charlestonians in the room, so my version won't be so accurate as theirs might have been. I acknowledge that. In the days following 1968, in Charleston County, publicly elected officials were faced with a decision that some decisions they had to make regarding desegregation of schools, and they were under threat of an Office of Civil Rights desegregation order. In the settlement of that order, the folks of Charleston County decided to establish 8 constituent districts in Charleston County. Each of those constituent districts has a publicly elected board. So I work for the Charleston County Board. It has 9 members. Charleston County is divided into 8 smaller districts. Each of those districts has a publicly elected board with from 5 to 7 to 9 members. So I actually have 9 Board of Education members, and then there are 50 other board members who exist in Charleston County. The constituent districts have the right to do 3 things. They decide which students can leave their districts, they decide which students can come into their districts, and they decide how to arrange the attendance lines for the schools that are in their districts. Those are the only 3 responsibilities they have. So when you talk about integration of schools or desegregation, and I'd like to differentiate here the difference between desegregating schools and integrating schools. They are vastly different propositions. That setup makes it a little more challenging. I think it just amplifies these regional differences that we have in any community in our country. So what those who were in Charleston County tried to do is create magnet schools, going into some of the most impoverished schools, the schools where people didn't want to send their children, and create math and science magnets or create creative arts magnets. And that approach worked really well as long as the leadership at the school understood it was about integration of the students once they arrived. Those experiments were so successful that those schools are full now, and we have to try to decide how to create more opportunities that replicate what has worked. In schools where that didn't go so well, the white folks overran those schools. So local African Americans now can't get into their own schools because we have a sibling policy. So if you're a local community Montessori school with a sibling policy, you might be able to take X number of kindergarten slots, but 75 of those slots are already taken up with the white kids whose brothers and sisters go to the school. So it's hard to manage. In the schools where it didn't go well at all, you might walk into one of those schools and you find all the local kids on one floor of the school, and you find all the magnet kids on another floor of the school. Mark Twain one time said, if I had a bucket of 1 foot in a bucket of boiling water and 1 foot in a bucket of ice water on whole, I'd be comfortable. So when you look at the results of those schools for a state accountability system purpose, the way our state's accountability system was set up, that school looks as though it's performing much better, but the children in that school on the whole are not performing better than they would have performed had we left them in 2 schools, a very successful school and a failing school. So It's complicated and complex. It's difficult, bone-wearying, back-breaking, debilitating work. It's God's work, and we have to do it. What I feel very hopeful about is that we seem to be at a time in my career where there is so much energy and effort and desire to make a difference. People are seeing we cannot, as a country, go on as we have in the past. And so the challenge is not arguing about where we're going to move children, but finding common ground and then deciding how we can move forward together with a coalition of the willing that represent diverse viewpoints and opinions, the collective effort that Russell was speaking of.
And this notion of collective effort, bringing in the communities, bringing in parents, other people, business, as you did with Transform SC, you say you're hopeful. What does it mean for South Carolina if we can bring these groups together and then create a vision?
Well, I'm encouraged. Now, Jerita's been at this just a little bit longer than I have. But so it's my 11th year in the superintendency. And for the first time, I can remember a time when the State Board of Education, the superintendent, the Education Oversight Committee, the legislators, what other groups am I missing? We weren't at the table together. We were going in different directions. And for the first time now, I see all of these groups coming together. Superintendents, we're meeting with the governor now and having conversations. So that's been so encouraging that we're listening to one another. I think we all have the same vision. We want what's best for the children in this state. Now, how do we get there is where that coordinated impact comes into play. So we're at a good place right now. We're doing some things. You know, we've got a poverty index in place right now. Is it enough? I don't know. It's not, I'll just say it. We're doing some things with reading coaches. We're doing some things with technology because we know there are disparities in our state right now. So we're making the right moves as a state, but that's going to be incremental change. We've got to come together and paint a picture and create this bold vision for our state and show the world, as we've shown with the floods and, you know, with what happened in Charleston with the Emmanuel 9, that this state, we can come together. We care about the least of those and the most of those. So that's what I'm looking for, and it's going to take some courage for us to do that.
And we'll have one more question, and that's where we talked about the 21st century students. So what is your hope for the 21st century student? And Dr. Postlewhite?
My hope is that as a state, we can let go of our current constraints and constructs about what it takes to be a high school graduate. It's not about earning Carnegie units. It's about knowing that you're prepared to step successfully into a positive, productive post-secondary endeavor, and we should want that for all of our children. Then we should set as our number one goal helping every child understand he has agency, he has choice, he has power, he has aspirations, and our job is to continually help children move toward those aspirations. I think to get there, we're going to need an accountability system that's about continuous improvement, that's about identifying who's bringing large number of children from poverty to much higher levels of achievement, who's opening up these doors of opportunity, finding those teachers and celebrating their heroic efforts, lifting them up, learning what they do, rather than putting a failing grade and condemning and criticizing those who've not yet begun to figure out what it takes. So my hope is that we're all clear on what it will mean to help people move from poverty to opportunity, what it takes to move from this feeling of hopelessness to knowing that we celebrate your ambition and your aspiration, and we understand what to do to help you get there. Success is having more and more and more young people realize they are someone. They have voice, they have choice, and they have advocates. And that's what we're here to do.
And Dr. Booker.
Yeah. John Dewey once said, what the best and wisest parent wants for his child, that must the community want for all of his children. So I would just ask you all the question, what do you want for your own child? You ponder that. And then that is my hope for South Carolina and for our kids in the 21st century.
Thank you. Dr. Booker, Dr. Postolate, extraordinary discussion and how we can really address those opportunity gaps and really look forward with hopefulness for the future. Thank you so much.
You have the conversation with Superintendents Booker and Postlewaite, as well as CEO of SCETV, Linda O'Brien. Earlier in the program, you heard from Sherry Thompson, the founder of Healing Species, the program using rescue dogs to teach compassion, and the winner of the 2016 Dick and Tonki Riley What Works SC Award for Excellence. This podcast is a presentation of South Carolina's Department of Education. Thanks so much for being with us for this replay of the events from the What Works SC conference sponsored by Furman's Riley Institute and South Carolina Future Minds. For South Carolina's Department of Education, I'm Doug Keel.